Hi, everyone. Welcome to the West Wellness and Longevity Podcast. My name is Tara West, and I am a functional nutritionist, passionate about how we can use food as medicine and truly heal our bodies. I'm also obsessed with longevity with a love for peptides, fitness, and all the latest and greatest biohacking resources. I spend hours upon hours looking at the latest research and implementing them into my own life and in my practice with my clients. I look forward to sharing all of this wonderful information with you. Hey guys, quick reminder, this podcast is for information purposes only and not meant to treat or diagnose. So please consult with your personal health practitioner prior to implementing anything that you hear about on this show. Now on to the next episode. All right, welcome back everyone. I was having dinner with some of my friends from college and my cousin happened to be there who we went to college with as well, and cousin by marriage, but still my cousin nonetheless. And I was talking to her. And she was telling me how she listens to my podcast. And I don't know why, it just struck me as, not funny is not the word. I think I was surprised, because I'm always just a little surprised when I find out that people actually listen to this. So Beth, if you're listening, a shout out to you. Had so much fun at dinner with you guys this weekend. So there you go. And let's kind of just dive into today's topic, because I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about, and this just popped in my head. I was like, oh, this would probably be a good episode. And I've touched on this before on different episodes, but I thought, well, I really want to do a bigger, deeper dive on this, because it's a question that I get so often. And the longer that I'm in this space, the more that I realize it is so unique to the individual. And that question is, why am I stalling on my weight loss with my GLP? Or sometimes it's, I have stalled, but I've also gained a little bit of weight back and I'm on the GLP and what's going on? And I wish there was a one size fits all answer to this, and there's not. And so as we kind of go through today's episode, you're going to start to see the picture that's being painted in regards to all the things that go into how effective a GLP can be short term and long term. So I want to start by talking about some of the reasons that are less discussed. We're going to talk about some of the reasons that are more discussed, but some of the reasons that are less discussed that people probably don't think about when it comes to a GLP maybe stalling or not being as effective as it was in the past. And usually with any individual, it's not just one thing. It's usually a lot of different things that are contributing to the overall picture. We know that when we start on these GLPs, we are addressing one of the bigger issues with metabolic health that systemically has a systemic effect along the way where it impacts other things, right? But once this one thing gets optimized, what's left in the trenches, if you will, that still needs some work to truly get us where we want to be. And that's the essence of what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to go through a bunch of these. And I think most of you will relate to a lot of them. I know that I did when I was putting my notes together for this episode. So here we go. One thing is metabolic adaptation. So as you lose weight, your body naturally adapts by decreasing its basal metabolic rate, your BMR, which you hear in this space people talk about all the time, and total energy expenditure. And it becomes more efficient at using calories, essentially trying to conserve energy as we return to its set point weight. And this is a powerful evolutionary mechanism that GLPs help to counteract but don't entirely override. Studies show that weight loss, regardless of method, leads to adaptive thermogenesis. And this means that calorie deficit required to continue losing weight becomes smaller as you get lighter. Okay, so I think that makes a lot of sense. And many episodes ago, I did a whole episode on the set point weight theory. And it's controversial. I don't know if it's controversial, but people have differing opinions on it. I actually believe that it's a real thing from personal experience and some of the science behind it. And this is what that is referring to. Okay. Another one is calorie creep and poor food choices. Y'all, I'm educated as a functional nutritionist, so I don't talk about it as much as I used to as I've gotten deeper into this peptide space, but the truth is there's no easy button or shortcut here. It may work short term for you and you may lose a bunch of weight in the beginning and not have to adjust your eating habits that much, but long term, it's if you don't change your daily habits, then you're going to eventually stall out or gain the weight back, even on the GLPs, okay? So while these GLPs reduce appetite and food noise, they don't eliminate the desire to eat entirely, thankfully, because we need to have hunger and we need to eat. Over time, some individuals may unconsciously start consuming slightly more calories or make less optimal food choices. Things like these highly processed foods, sugary drinks, high-fat snacks. And these are calorie-dense but lack satiety. And we know that the science shows that the food that has a lack of nutrients to it, that's not nutrient-dense, tends to not keep us very full for very long. And it creates this chemical reaction in our brains when we eat these processed foods that make us want to go back for more. And just because we're on a GLP, that does not entirely go away. And so as everything starts to stabilize once we've been on this GLP for a while and our hunger starts to come back a little bit more, if you haven't changed your overall habit, you're going to start grabbing those foods again, even if it's in smaller portions. But that has an overall impact on how effective your GLP is going to be. This is another big one. This is one that I talk about all the time with people, and I cannot stress it enough. And this is something, look, I struggle with too, okay? But it is so important, and that is getting sufficient protein intake. Protein is crucial, again, for that satiety and especially for preserving lean muscle mass during weight loss. And it has a higher thermic effect of food, meaning your body burns more calories digesting it. That's the beautiful thing about protein. So you eat more protein and your body's going to burn more calories trying to use it, right? So that's an easy way to increase your metabolic rate. If protein intake is too low, you're going to feel less full, leading to increased overall calorie consumption. And even more importantly, you're at risk of losing muscle with the fat. Okay. And we know as we lose muscle, that lean muscle that we so desperately need to hold on to as we age, that lowers our resting metabolic, that lowered our metabolic rate, and we're going to be more prone to gain weight more easily. And this is what is known as the term skinny fat, right? You can be skinny, but if you don't have the right amount of lean muscle, your body fat percentage can still be very high. And there's nothing healthy about that. And long term, it's going to end up biting you in the butt because once you start adapting to the GLPs and are not as effective, because you've lowered your overall metabolic rate, that weight's going to come back exponentially faster and it's going to be harder to get off the second time around. Okay, lack of physical activity. Again, we're going back to these, making these lifestyle changes along with the GLP use. Okay, so exercise, particularly resistance training, strength training, helps preserve and build muscle mass. I need to stress, this is the metabolically active tissue. So losing muscle further exacerbates metabolic adaptation, okay? And cardiovascular exercise also contributes to a caloric deficit and improves overall health. So it's super critical that you're not just exercising, that you're actually strength training. And particularly when it comes to women of my generation, and I would even dare say my daughter's generation, we were all raised to get on the treadmill, jazzercise, you know, all those things where the more you sweat, the faster you run, the more that you're doing cardiovascular type of activity, that's the way to go. And the truth is, as I was getting into my late 40s and now I'm 50, I totally switched the entire way that I worked out, where I was doing 90% strength training and 10% cardio. And that has been such a game changer for keeping up that lean muscle mass, keeping my metabolic rate at a higher level, and just body composition overall. That also means that you may weigh a little bit more. Everyone knows that muscle weighs more than fat. And if you are someone that's in the gym and you're building muscle, don't worry about the scale so much. How do your clothes fit? How do you feel? How do you look? That sort of thing. You can't be a couch potato and take a GLP and expect it just to do its magic while you're sitting there on the couch watching TV, right? So keep that in mind. Okay. Things like inadequate sleep, particularly women struggle with this. I know it's something I have to constantly keep in balance. Poor sleep quality or quantity disrupts hormones that regulate appetite, things like ghrelin and leptin. It increases cortisol. This is a stress hormone that we all know about. It also, when you have raised cortisol levels, that promotes fat storage, especially around the abdomen, and it impairs insulin sensitivity. And these effects can counteract a lot of the benefits of the GLPs. So if I have someone that I'm working with, it's not normally just the sleep, it's normally several other things. This is, again, this cumulative effect of if you're in a stall, we need to start checking the boxes of all these things, all right? And high cortisol is something that a lot of women, particularly in their 40s and early 50s and beyond, really struggle with. I happen to be one of them. Chronic stress, which also leads again to this elevated cortisol. So you've heard me talk a lot about how I'm one of these people that stays in that fight or flight mode. It's because I just live in a stressed state. To me, it feels very normal. I am constantly go, what's the next thing? So on and so forth. So I had a huge real estate career while I was raising my two kids, pretty much from the times they were infants to the time they left home and beyond even. And I don't know any other way to be. And so you get locked into feeling like this is normal. And I have put things in place to try to help with my stress level, exercise being one of them, making that a priority, eating the right kind of food, definitely prioritizing sleep, trying to shut things down in the evening. Breathing can really help. Taking time throughout the day to be thoughtful and mindful of how are you feeling? Do you need to take a mental break? Do you need to take some deep breaths? Do you need to get up and go for a walk? And all these things cumulatively can really help with that stress level, but you have to prioritize it. And you have to really acknowledge that it does have a really big impact, but it also can impact things like the effectiveness of your GLP. Dosing and titration, this is a big one. And this isn't everyone. Again, we're not talking about everyone falls in this category. But one of the things, because we're in this space right now where microdosing is such a big deal, right? And I'm a fan of microdosing, don't get me wrong. The thing with microdosing is it can look very different for different people. A microdose for me might be more than what you need for a microdose to be effective. And we get in our heads that this is the only way to be successful on a GLP or to do it in a healthy way. And that's just not true. Some people, I call them hyper-responders, can take 500 mcgs or half a milligram of retatrutide, stay on that dose, and they lose 8 or 10 pounds in the first couple of months, and they're able to keep it off, and they're great. Most people, according to what the research suggests, says that really when retatrutide starts being effective is more at the 2 milligram dose. So you can see the difference there. A microdose for somebody else might be that 2 milligrams that then they spread across a week as opposed to doing a once daily or once weekly injection rather. And I'm going to go into that in just a minute. And that's when that dose starts working for them. Or some people get stuck in their head that they shouldn't titrate up. Look, here's the deal. I'm always going to tell you to stay on the lowest effective dose. That's what you want to do. I don't like seeing people on these super high doses of the GLPs. When I see that, that's when some of these other things start to click and say, okay, something else is going on here. So you do want to stay on the lowest effective dose, but just know your lowest effective dose may be different than your sister's, your mom's, or your best friend. All right. Underlying or undiagnosed, unmanaged medical conditions is another one. I see this a lot around hypothyroidism with women. They just don't know that they have it. And part of that is because 99% of the lab tests that are done by allopathic medicine, it is not comprehensive enough to really diagnose someone. That's the main culprit that I see of it going undiagnosed. And even little variations that are not in the optimal lab range for a thyroid can really throw someone off. That's something. PCOS is another one. It is just, particularly in this younger generation of women, I see it so much. It's mind-blowing. So you have to know that there's these environmental influences that are playing into this, and it can really prevent a GLP from being as effective. Now, GLPs are one of the main things that really help get women with PCOS back on track, but often they're needing help with thyroids. They have some micronutrient deficiencies that need to be looked at. Their hormones need to be looked at, that sort of thing. So there's a much bigger picture there. So if you can look at the person holistically and say, we need to do this and this, and the GLP, then you start seeing things really be effective. Okay, individual variability in genetics. You've heard me talk about this several times recently. I did a whole episode on it if you want to go back and listen to it. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it here. But the truth is, too, is some people have genetic factors that keep a GLP from being super effective for them. And so then you have to start looking at other pathways. And we're going to go into that a little bit, but really trying to figure out if everything else looks good, and this is the one piece that's out of whack, then we probably have something genetic going on. My hope is that somebody at some point, and this may already exist, and if it does, feel free to email me, has some sort of, or develops some sort of genetic test that tells someone, hey, yeah, this is going to be really effective for you, or no, you might get some benefit from it, but it's going to be a much slower process and you're probably going to have to be on a higher dose, or we may need to look at a different pathway to help you get there. So that is something that can cause a stall at a certain point, or can just cause it from not being as effective in general. Then there are little things here and there that I think really people don't think about, like inadequate hydration. Sometimes the body can confuse thirst signals for hunger. So even if you're on this GLP, and I find this a lot, and you're not hydrating well, you're going to grab for food instead of water. And this goes back to really being in tune with that mind-body connection and knowing what's really going on with you. And when I was doing nutritional consulting, and I was really looking at people's food logs and how much water they were drinking every day and that sort of thing, I would ask them, hey, before you pick up a bite of food, drink at least 8 ounces of water and see how you feel. That hunger may have actually gone away. So if you're finding that you're stalling, or you're maybe even gaining a little bit of weight back, these are just some little tweaks here and there that you can start to make comprehensively to try to get you back on track. This is another one, I think, is having unrealistic expectations. I know that I fall victim of this if I'm being completely honest and transparent. So reaching a healthy weight for your body. Sometimes we look at people, and people let the pendulum swing way too far with this. They lose too much weight. They get too thin. They don't look healthy. They've lost too much lean muscle mass. But you're over here and you're looking in the mirror and you're being hypocritical of yourself and you're thinking, well, why can't I get down to this certain weight? You've got that weight stuck in that certain weight amount stuck in your head. Most women have this. I know this for a fact because I work with so many women. I talk to my girlfriends. I struggle with this myself. And this is where you have to get out of the mindset scale means everything. And your body knows how to adapt. Again, we're going to go back to that set point weight, okay? Or that weight set point. And your body has a place where it's going to feel comfortable. So I find that some women get to a place, but I want to be 10 pounds less. Your body just may not be healthy at that weight. So adjusting some of those expectations sometimes, I think, is really important. All right, now this is one that I want to spend a little more time on. We're going to dive into it a little bit. Hormones. I would be remiss if we didn't talk about hormones, because hormones play such a big role. I'm in the process right now of getting my hormones tested, which maybe I'll do an episode on, because my hormones have been great, but I am 50, and the last couple of months, I've just noticed some things being a little off, including a couple of pounds creeping up. And I'm thinking, you know what? I'm at that age. I'm showing all the signs of perimenopause. I know I've been in perimenopause for the last couple years, but it's time to get the hormones checked again and see if I need to optimize that, because that's really important. It's truly fundamental when you get to a certain age for the GLPs and really health optimization to come into play. Now, let me say this. One of my very best friends just recently had hormone receptor positive breast cancer treatment, and her doctors have advised her not to ever be on hormones again, I know that this is a very individual choice. You're going to hear a ton of different opinions out there, but I definitely want to be respectful to all of you ladies out there that for whatever reason have either chosen not to take hormones or for medical reasons cannot take them. So I realize that when you hear about hormone optimization and you're not bringing up that part of the conversation, I want you to know I hear you, I feel you, and there are other ways through some of the things that we just talked about, what I'm going to talk about in a minute, you can continue to optimize the effectiveness of your GLP. But for those of us who can't take hormones or choose to take hormones, let's talk about this, okay? So not just sex hormones, which we're going to go into, which was what I meant when I was talking about everything I just mentioned before, but you also have to consider things like leptin hormones. There are some people that genetically don't have, that's a satiety hormone, don't have as much strength in their leptin receptors as other people. So if your leptin receptors are not super active from a genetic standpoint, then the GLPs may not be as effective or you may stall quicker. Again, that goes back to this genetic thing, okay? Things like ghrelin too, which is the hunger hormone, right? So while GLPs suppress ghrelin, weight loss can cause a compensatory increase in ghrelin levels. So sometimes this is why we've been on a GLP for a while, and then all of a sudden we start getting the hunger and the food noise back, okay? Because our body's readjusting to things, trying to level the playing field. Thyroid hormones, you heard me talk about this a minute ago. So I see GLPs really help stabilize thyroid, but for some people and some individuals, significant calorie restriction and weight loss can lead to a slight decrease in thyroid conversion, that T4 to T3, the inactive to the active, okay? And that subtly slows metabolism to conserve energy. So that is going to have a decrease in your metabolic rate, which is going to cause you to gain weight more easily or stall out. It's another reason why you can start to see the picture here of how all this stuff works together. It's super important that we're not overly calorie restricting. That can backfire on you ultimately. In the beginning, like I said, you're going to lose a bunch of weight doing that. But long term, it can actually be very detrimental. So that leads back to the protein intake and everything else. All this stuff works together, all right? Cortisol is another hormone we talked about. And again, I mentioned it once, but this falls into several different categories. So I wanted to bring it up here in the hormone category, because if we're having poor sleep and if we're in a chronic fight or flight mode, our cortisol levels are going to be messed up. And again, this is where I see particularly ladies really holding on to that midsection fat that tends to get more difficult to manage as we get older. Now let's go into the sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. So estrogen and progesterone, the hormonal fluctuations during different phases of the menstrual cycle and menopause and menopause can significantly impact metabolism, fluid retention, and fat distribution. So estrogen decline during menopause often leads to increased abdominal fat storage and a more challenging environment for weight loss. You also want to make sure that your estrogen and progesterone ratios are in balance with each other. And that's a lot of things that a lot of practitioners don't look at. So if you're working with a practitioner, you need to ask them, hey, are my estrogen and progesterone levels in balance with each other? Not that they're just at good levels. You want to be at optimal levels and you want them to be in balance. And a really good, probably a functional practitioner, in my opinion, will know what that is. And if they don't, then you probably need to find someone else to go. And last but not least, testosterone. Low testosterone can lead to increased body fat, decreased muscle mass, and metabolic changes that can hinder weight loss with women. Women that do struggle with PCOS and that sort of thing have to be careful with the androgen part of testosterone. But I often see this is where a lot of women start. They start with testosterone. Normally, then they'll add in progesterone and estrogen comes in later. One of the things that I will, and I don't want to go too deep in this, that I'm working with people when they go see someone and a practitioner throws all three hormones at them at one time. And usually it does not end very well, because you don't know what's going on. And once that gets out of balance, trying to get them all back in balance is just, it's an uphill battle. So this is my opinion. I like to see women start with one at a time, whether that be progesterone or testosterone. I think estrogen normally is the last one you want to layer in, but you wanted to see how your body's going to respond to each individual hormone before you start mixing them all together. It's kind of the idea of like how you stack peptides. Again, I'm not a physician. I'm trained as and educated as a functional nutritionist, but I've worked with a lot of ladies and hormones over the years, and this is one of the things that we would have discussions about when they would go to their provider and say, hey, I want to get on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. So no, my whole point in this is if, let's say that you started, and you're just like me, you started using a GLP maybe in your late 40s, the hormones have been great. All of a sudden, the GLP seems to not be as effective. And all of a sudden, you get a little bit of weight gain back. You're like, what's going on? You probably need to go get your hormones checked because that could be preventing the GLP from working in an optimal way. And the truth is, it's not so much about the GLP. It's about optimizing your metabolic ability to handle certain things. And hormones can play a huge part in that. Could probably do a whole episode on how hormones can impact GLPs and vice versa, because I think they kind of go hand in hand. So I'm not going to get into that. The truth is the GLPs can help stabilize hormones, but then there's a tipping point when your hormones decline too much that you need the hormones to come back in and help the GLP to be more effective. Hopefully that makes sense, but I'm going to wrap up that section there. Okay, before we go into how do you kind of resolve some of these things or what's the best thing to do, I have to bring up what everyone talks about and what I get questions about all the time is receptor desensitization, okay? It's a mouthful. For some reason, I have a hard time saying that. So this is the concept that if you take GLPs for an extended period of time, you're going to be desensitized from a receptor standpoint on how effective the GLP works. And this is what most people consider the main culprit for a GLP starting to decline in its effectiveness. So I want to break this down very simply because I think we throw up these words, receptor, like what does that even mean? But think of the receptors. And let me be clear, I'm sure most of y'all understand this concept, but I just felt the need to break it down anyway. So here we go. You can think of receptors like little communication antennas on the cells, and their job is to receive signals. And in the case of the GLP peptides, the peptide sends a signal and the receptor receives it. Once that receptor is activated, the body responds by doing things like reducing appetite, increasing fullness, slowing digestion, and improving blood sugar regulation. So in very simple terms, the peptide talks and the receptor listens, okay? What happens over time is that the body is incredibly adaptive. It's always trying to maintain balance. So when the same receptor gets stimulated over and over again for long periods of time, the body can sometimes start turning the volume down. This is what receptor desensitization means. So the receptor may become less sensitive, less responsive, or less reactive to the same signal. So that means that exact same dose that once created a huge effect may start to create a smaller effect later on. A simple way to think about this is walking into a room with a strong perfume or candle. I don't like perfume or candle. They give me headaches anyway. I won't go into genetically what that means for me. I don't have great detox genetics. I'll put it that way. So it gives me headaches. But we've all walked into a room before where it's either a positive or a negative smell, right? At first, that smell is overwhelming. But after 30 minutes, sometimes sooner, you barely notice it anymore. Did that smell disappear? No. Your brain simply adapted to the constant exposure. And that's essentially the idea behind this receptor desensitization. The signal is still there, but the response to the signal becomes less dramatic over time. So what this means is when you first start that GLP, you have that overwhelming, the food noises completely disappeared. I forget to eat. I got full instantly. My cravings vanished. But months or maybe a year or so later, hunger starts creeping back in. Satiety feels weaker. There's more breakthrough cravings, less dramatic appetite suppression. The other thing I will say about this is I think sometimes we forget what it felt like to have the appetite we had before, right? And so this becomes the new norm and you feel like it's not as effective, but it just becomes the new normal. And so you're not thinking about it as much. Although I do think this receptor desensitization is a real thing. And if you look at it from a survival standpoint, the body doesn't necessarily love a dramatic weight loss, the brain is designed to protect energy stores. So whenever a strong signal continuously pushes the body in one direction, in this case, reducing food intake, the body may slowly attempt to counterbalance that effect. That's just human physiology at work. And the body adapts to almost everything. Think about caffeine, nicotine, certain medications, hormones, stimulus signals. So the GLP receptor signaling may not be completely immune to this adaptation either. And it really, logically, that makes sense to me. And I think just from an anecdotal standpoint, in this research peptide community, it's pretty common that you hear this across the board. So we've talked about, and I'm going to try to keep this next section short and sweet because I know I'm going long on time, but we've talked about all these things that can impact the effectiveness of your GLP and the stall out of it over time. And a lot of it I'm not going to dive into because it's common sense, right? We need to eat more. We need to exercise more. We need to change our lifestyle choices. But let's dive into some of the things you can do. And one of the things that I think, particularly at a certain age, again, 40s, 50s, and beyond, is you need to have your labs run. If you can afford to do it, I realize it's not on the table for everyone, but you need a full thyroid panel. I'm just going to mention a few things, okay? A good functional practitioner will know exactly what to test for, but so many of us don't know about a functional practitioner and don't have access to one. And this is where you have to really advocate for yourself. And many episodes, again, back, I did an episode on this. I don't remember the title of it. And it was probably when I was first starting all this. So it's probably terrible as far as me talking and stuff and the editing. So I apologize in advance for that. But you need things like a full thyroid panel, male or female, you need that. Normally you just get the TSH tested. You need your T3, your T4. Your antibody hormones, your reverse T3, you need to look at all of those to have a really clear picture of what your thyroid is actually doing. And so often I just see the TSH, which is the thyroid stimulating hormone, and it's within a very large range that isn't optimal. And your doctor said, oh, you're great. You're in the normal range. And that could not be further from the truth. So do some research on your own on that and advocate for yourself that you want a full thyroid panel. A comprehensive sex hormone panel. You need progesterone, estrogen, FSH, LH, testosterone, free testosterone, the bioavailability of that testosterone. And you need to, I think the time for women in their phase, if you're still having a cycle, is between days 19 and 22. You need to get tested. That's the optimal time to get tested. And you need to look at all of those. You also need to look at your cortisol levels. It's important to see where you fall. That's something that you need to work on. That can be a game changer for so many people. Also need to look at your inflammation factors. What's your C-reactive protein, your homocysteine levels, micronutrient test. Do you have any major micronutrient deficiencies that are kind of causing your body to kind of say, hey, wait a second, hold on, stop losing weight, or we need to get in the preservation mode so then you start gaining weight, that sort of thing. So I see that a lot, particularly with women that are getting a little bit up there in the later years, because we know that's a hallmark. One of the hallmarks of aging is that we don't utilize our nutrients as well. You also need to look at your fasting insulin and your fasting glucose and your A1C. Often we'll see fasting glucose or A1C, but don't always see fasting insulin. All of those are important markers to see how is your body handling those things? And those are just a few things. My point is you need someone that's going to do a comprehensive functional lab panel to really see where you fit into things and what could be a problem that could be stalling you to get you out of that and get you truly optimized. And once you do that too, you'll be amazed how great you feel. And again, I'm going to touch on the nutrition. You can't be effective in this journey without your nutrition being in place. There is no easy button to override that. You have to prioritize eating whole organic foods. You need to prioritize high protein, non-processed. That includes the protein shakes and the protein bars. And look, do I have some of those on hand when I'm in a crunch? I do. I'd love to tell you that I don't have any of them on hand, but it's not something that needs to be consumed daily. And it truly needs to be something when maybe you're traveling, but and you're in a time crunch, I try to prioritize ahead and think ahead. So I'm not in that situation where that becomes a problem where I'm having to reach for stuff like this. But you have to prioritize your nutrition. And again, exercise, right? These lifestyle changes are so important. Exercise, strength training, we talked about this, prioritizing your sleep. Those lifestyle changes, I cannot stress how critical those are comprehensively to getting you optimal so your GLP can truly be effective. Okay, now let's talk about some other things you can do that I've found from a peptide standpoint, which is probably why you're listening to begin with, that can be truly impactful. One of the things that I have worked with people on that have come to me and said this, that they're stalling or the weight loss is stalled or they're plateaued, whatever, however you want to say it, is to split your dose in half. So it's not even increasing the dose. So let's just say you're on 5 milligrams of tirzepatide. So you take 2.5 milligrams, half that dose on a Monday, and then take the second half, the other 2.5 milligrams on a Thursday. Because what happens with these things is you're going to get that, think of a bell curve. You're going to get the big impact of it within a day or two of taking it. And that's going to slowly start to decline the rest of the week. Okay. And this is where sometimes some of those food cravings kind of creep back in, that sort of thing. And you just don't realize you have more of a caloric intake. And again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You need to be managing how many calories you're taking and eating enough sustainable calories, nutritious calories or nutrient dense calories. But I see this can be tricky if like you take it on a Monday and you get into the weekend and you're going out to dinner and then all of a sudden you're not making the best food choices because you're at the end of that. I find that people really stabilize out and can really break through a stall just simply by breaking up their dose. It's also good for people who get stuck on the lower doses that may not be impactful for them. So they get stuck on these lower doses because they can't handle the side effects. Some people are just more sensitive to them. I'm one of the fortunate ones that I really have zero side effects from them, but I work with a ton of people that really struggle with it. So a good way to help titrate that dose up, let's say you're on retatrutide and you're stuck at that 0.5 milligrams because you tried the 1 milligram dose, which is the next step up, and you couldn't tolerate it. Break that in half. Take 0.5 milligrams on a Monday, 0.5 on the Thursday, and that really can help people get people over that side effect. And then you can slowly start to move up to maybe, not always, that 1 milligram may work, but maybe you need to get to 2 milligrams or a little bit above that to get to that truly therapeutic dose for you, but you won't stay stuck at that lower dose that's not affected. And that can really help people break through things as well. Okay, let's talk about some complementary peptides that can really help support a GLP. And I have seen help people break through a stall, depending on what's going on with them. Now, the first one I want to talk about is MOTC. Let me be clear. MOTC is not a weight loss peptide. And I think people get confused by that. And they think that it is. I've had people come to me and say, I'm going to get off my GLP so I can remain sensitive to it. So can I use MOTC? So let's be clear. MOTC is not going to be effective in the way that a GLP is, but it can come alongside a GLP and potentially help push you out of that stall if you're doing all the lifestyle changes that are really important. MOTC, as we know, is primarily known for its role in mitochondrial health and energy metabolism, and it also helps with insulin sensitivity, so you can see how it can really complement a GLP. It influences the AMPK signaling, which is a master regulator of cellular energy homeostasis. So it essentially helps cells utilize glucose and fat more efficiently. So it can help with the GLP stall because you have enhanced metabolic flexibility by improving the mitochondrial function. And MOTC can help your body become more efficient at switching between burning glucose and burning fat for fuel. And this can be critical when metabolism has become stagnant. So it's not going to hit the place of a GLP, but you can get the idea how it can help complement a GLP. And some people, at the right dose, it can help get them out of the stall. Another one, cagrilintide. You've heard me talk about this. So cagrilintide has similar effects that a GLP does, but it works on an entirely different pathway. It works on the amylin pathway. So if you're someone that is genetically not sensitive to GLPs, or you've had a stall in your GLP and you don't necessarily want to raise that dose, Cabrilintide could come in and really be a game changer for people. So, and I've seen this work. And I usually tell people to take it in between. So if you're doing, let's just say you're doing a Monday and a Friday, you could take the Cabrilintide on a Wednesday. You're going to get different schools of thought on this. But it just hits the satiety, the hunger, all of that, the insulin sensitivity and all of that from a different pathway. It's called the amylin pathway. But it can help if you're losing some of that satiety sensitivity and some of that food noise is coming back. It can help reestablish that on a different pathway so you're not getting too desensitized to the GLP pathway. One thing I will caution you about Cabrilintide is it can make you very tired at the beginning. I know it did me. You want to start very low and slow on that. So if you do try it, I think the starting recommended dose is 250 mcg, so 0.25 milligrams. Start very slow and know that some fatigue in the beginning is very normal. All right, Orforglipron. I don't know who comes up with these names on things. This is a small molecule. It's a small GLP molecule. And so it's not a peptide, but it does work on the same pathway. It does work on the GLP pathway. It's just a single, works on the single GLP. It's not working on the GIP or the glucagon like tirzepatide with GIP and glucagon with GIP, or with retatrutide with GIP and glucagon. So it's simply working on the GLP. So for those of you, particularly with the glucagon aspect, if you're sensitive to that's in the retatrutide, you could orally take the orforglipron a couple of times a week in between your shots, and it could help strengthen that GLP signaling. And people are in the school of thought that it impacts the receptor a little bit differently. I don't know enough or found enough on that to say definitively one way or the other, but I really have seen orforglipron help people get past a stall, especially if they don't want to raise their injection, okay? They want to maybe even keep the GIP glucagon receptor super sensitive, but they need that extra GLP component for that satiety and that food noise. It could be a really good one to layer in, at least short term, to get you over the hump with a stall. Two more things to talk about, and then we're going to wrap this up. Is it's becoming more popular in the research peptide space. I'm not recommending you do it, but when I did, I think it was last week when I did the episode on mazdutide, which is another, it's a different GLP that's not talked about very much, not very well known yet, is combining the GLPs together. And I have seen this be effective, but I think you have to be very cautious with it. So some people who don't tolerate the glucagon aspect of the retatrutide well, it makes you restless, you have the rapid heart rate, you're not sleeping well at night. That's that glucagon component that you're not able to handle it well. But you're in a stall with tirzepatide. So layering in something like mazdutide that has some of that glucagon or even a little tiny bit of reta can really help with that fat burn, because that glucagon part is what helps raise the metabolic rate and provide the fat burning component. But if we titrate it at a lower dose, you may tolerate it better, but still get the amount of GLP you want out of the other peptide. I've played around with this. I can tell you that it does work. I'm not recommending you do it. I'm not giving you dosing. I'm just saying you would want to do it very low and slow and see how you do. The other thing that I've seen people do is with the retatrutide, if they're not getting, again, enough of that G, or the glucagon's raising the metabolism so much that they get so much hunger on it, but they're liking the fat burning part of it, you could layer in a little bit of, say, tirzepatide, or even again, the orforglipron to get more of that stronger GLP component. I've seen this help people get out of stalls, but again, it's something you'd want to do cautiously. Talk to your own practitioner or healthcare provider, whoever, before you started doing something like that. But anecdotally, I've done it, my own N of one. I've worked with people that have done it, and I'm in this space where I hear people that talk about it, and it can be effective, but again, very cautiously. I'm not saying you go out and do this. Please go do your own research before you attempt to do anything like that, all right? There's my disclosure. Okay, last but not least, this is the question I get. Should I cycle off the GLP altogether? And that's a very personal choice. I personally kind of like to stay on a really low dose at any given time due for its anti-inflammatory benefits and all the things. There are times that I titrate up. If I feel like maybe the weight's moving back on. I want to lean out. Maybe if like the inflammation is coming back. There's all kinds of reasons why I would choose to titrate up. Should you get off it altogether? Again, that's a personal choice. Can you remain sensitive to it if you don't? I think if you stay at a really very low baby dose of these things, you definitely can maintain sensitivity to it. And then if you need to titrate up, you can. If you decide to get off of it altogether, know that it does. These things have a very long half-life and they cumulatively stay in your body for a while. So it may be weeks before all of it fully gets out of your system, depending on how long you've been taking it. That's why a lot of people that get off it, like, oh, I feel great. I haven't noticed any change since getting off of it. And then around month two or three, they're like, oh, they start feeling it again. I know the times that I've gotten off of it completely and I've gotten back on it, I didn't realize how much it was helping with my inflammation, because beyond weight loss, that's the first thing that went away. And I was like, oh yeah, this is why I like staying on a low dose of it. I do think it's important to either titrate the way down or completely get off of it for a while to maintain sensitivity. But I think that's a personal choice. And you could titrate down really slowly so it doesn't feel so overwhelming to your body. Some people do it just cold turkey. For me, and this is probably not the popular school of thought, if I stop doing it, I just stop doing it. I don't worry about that so much. If you're on 5 milligrams of tirzepatide, go down to 4 for a couple of weeks, then 3 a couple of weeks, then 2 a couple of weeks, then 1 a couple of weeks, and then you can get off of it. Or just stay at a really low, like 1 milligram dose or something like that. That's really up to you. But I do think there is something to this receptor sensitivity that you need to work on to make sure you're maintaining that. Okay, so come full circle here. We talked about all kinds of things that can impact the effectiveness of your GLP. And really, the truth is health optimization overall. And I hope you can see that it's not one thing. There are so many different things you can do, so many different avenues you can take, many different peptides you can layer in. And look, I only talked about a couple. The growth hormone peptides, I think, have a place here, which I didn't mention as far as lean muscle mass, growth hormone, that sort of thing to help preserve your metabolic rate. So I didn't go into that, but there's that one. There's different ones like 5-amino-1-NQ, AOD9604. Could go on and on. I tried to touch on the ones that I think are the most impactful in this situation, but that, again, plays into this. It's unique to everyone. So if you are frustrated and you're experiencing a stall, or you just feel like all the food noise and stuff is coming back, remember all these things and try to attack them a little bit at a time to see what is going to be effective for you, and know that this is not a one size fits all. So that is going to wrap up this episode. It went way longer than I thought, but again, this is such a topic that I get so many questions on. It was really hard to keep it very short and concise, because I've seen the variability in this with so many people, including myself. And I think the only other thing I want to say is, if you are a woman and you love peptides, you're just getting started, or you're well into your journey, please join my free group, the Women's Peptide Collective. We talk about all the things we talked about today, and then some. Again, it's a free forum. The link is going to be in the show notes. If you have any questions, my email's in the show notes. Please email me. I will do my best to answer those questions for you. If you were listening today and you're like, I don't know where to get started on peptide, I have a free peptide guide. It's kind of just a general guideline of different peptides, dosing protocols, that sort of thing. You can email me and I will send that over to you. Yeah. And I kind of think that's it. I'm going to wrap this up quick. Also, just thank you again. If you liked this episode, if you found it interesting, please share with your friends, your family, whoever. The more you share it, the more this gets out there, the more I'm able to continue to provide information to all of you. And I love doing what I do. And I'm so grateful for each and every one of you and all of your support. It means the world to me. And I think that's it for this episode, guys. So until next time, have a blessed day.